pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the October 6th Alloway Village Board meeting. I'll call the meeting to order. Roll call. Trustee Harris will be late. Trustee Atwood.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
President Gast is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
All right. In terms of the agenda for tonight, I would propose that we move public appearances from 5 to 3A before the presentation. Any other proposed modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, I'll move to adopt the agenda as modified. Is there a second? Trustee Dart, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The modified agenda is adopted. Any announcements from the board? Hearing none, announcements from staff?
The only announcement I would like to make is Trevor and I have been working with some of the developers to come up with to expose our corridor study. So whether or not we end up having an open house for developers to come in, whether it turns out to be a combination of an open house one-on-one with developers, certainly looking at trying to start that dialogue and really try to get something going within our corridor.
Cocktails and hors d'oeuvres at the Lorelei would attract some people. Just a suggestion. Craig.
With regard to Riverside Drive, a few key items. Next week, beginning October 12th, next week and the following week, there will be some repair work going on Riverside Drive. They'll be milling and overlaying sections of Riverside Drive where the road is in poor shape as a temporary measure to improve the drivability of that roadway. This is separate from the larger scale improvements that they planned in 2017, or which may perhaps be moved up to 2016. But this is a separate task. We were just notified of this a few days ago that they're going to do some improvements next week. So be aware of that. We'll post it on the website as well. Two key dates. November 4th will be the local officials meeting. You will receive an invitation, as will the peer. This is where they're going to go through all of the changes that have gone on. There are some design changes to the roadway, as well as the status of the environmental report, which is the change in the roadway width and the bike accommodation and those particular features. So I think this would be a pretty important meeting to make if you possibly can, to be current on what's going on in the project. And then November 18th will be a public information meeting at Aldo Leopold School. That will be to present the same information, and they're going to be looking for feedback on not only the biking, but some of the design changes to the roadway. So those are the two key dates that are coming up. There was to be a workshop. They've decided against the workshop. They want to go directly to the public information and local officials meeting. So that's the status of Riverside Drive.
Why did they decide against the workshop?
I don't know specifically why they decided against it. That was this morning when they made that decision, but I think timing was a big part of it, trying to fit it all in.
Okay, so are they thinking, I know we're put off due to funding, are they thinking it's moving that up again?
No.
Okay.
This is related to the bike accommodations, the schedule changes, some design changes in the roadway that they've made subsequent to the meetings that we had before. But I think there was a trade-off there on, I don't know what's the best way to put it, the significance of the meetings or the importance of the meetings. I think they wanted to get the public officials and the general public information. I don't think that they felt that the workshop was going to add much to the overall information gathering that they wanted to get.
Okay. Okay, so this will be an update on the timeline also?
Yes, all of that information will be covered.
Thank you.
All right, anything else, Greg? Any other staff announcements?
Where would be the location for the local officials meeting? Would that be here? Or would
it'll be at the DOT office.
Institute.
My guess is that'll be a 5 o'clock or a 6 o'clock meeting, but I'm not sure. But there should be an email coming out to you here in the next couple of days in that regard.
And the second date, the public meeting was on what day? Did you say the 18th?
That's on the 18th.
Okay, got it. Aldo Leopold.
Let the record reflect that Trustee Harris arrived at 6:35. Any other announcements, staff or board? Hearing none, we'll move to public appearances, which was moved up. Mr. Matuzak.
Harris Matuzak, 2680 South Brookshire Avenue. I promise to be brief and be gone. Agenda item 9. I would strongly urge the board to have a informational public hearing before you make any decisions on that. In case you don't, my preferences are as follows. Number one, use it for levy stabilization in case you have an increased tax coming up. Number two, we apply the bulk of it to debt because that's amounted too much. And finally, you might want to use some for the road maintenance fund. So, hopefully you'll have a book in, because I'm sure there's other people that are interested in that money too, and some, a lot of people want to get at it. The other thing is the little white outhouse. I've not seen any changes. Is there any progress report on making that thing look a little bit better? And people are complaining to me. I'm going to send them down to your office because I shouldn't be having any complaints. I don't work here anymore.
We don't like taking complaints, Clarence. That's why we let you be the front man on things like that. Mm-hmm. Craig, any update on what Clarence colloquially refers to as the outhouse?
Well, I don't really have much of an update for you. We've had discussions about it. I think we're going to see some additions made to it. We are planning some landscaping that we're going to do there, but we won't do the landscaping until spring. It's too late in the year to do that. So, and the contractor has not been back to finish some of the things that were left undone when he moved out, what, 6 or 8 weeks ago or whatever it was. There's still some work that needs to be done. So I don't have a definite date for you, but if you have people that have questions, send them to me.
No, there's some screening, you know, even trellis would help.
Yeah, there will be.
That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for coming. First, I like Tom, but I don't want to say it was all that.
Thank you, Clarence. Anyone else wish to appear before the board during public appearance? Sir. Just state your name and address. And
yes. My name is Jerry Sullivan. I live at 310 Floral Drive. And I have a little complaint with the Recreation Department. There's a real big black walnut, two of them, behind my house, right on the other side of my fence, by the ballpark. And they're raining down the nuts, and the branches are extending over our deck and also our Florida room. And it's coming down. And I tried to get something done, and he said they just can't do it. The only one that he did last year, and they cut off one of the branches over the road because the garbage truck couldn't get through. So I'm 87 years old, and it's a hell of a job picking up over 1,000 of those things. And it's every day, sometimes twice a day, pick them up. And if you take a ride down on the ball side there, you can see the thousands of them that are laying in the road. Trucks going by, cars going by, they're popping. So I'd like to have something. I know we can't do it this fall, but in spring, to have those trimmed and get them off my roof, get off my deck, and as much as you can on the other side of the fence, I would appreciate it.
Brad, did you hear the address, Brad?
No, I did not.
310.
What was the address?
310 Floral Drive.
Oh, that's right. I wrote Brian. That didn't sound right. Okay.
Yeah, maybe if you could have Chris look into that.
Yeah.
I know, I talked to, I think, you before, and you said you couldn't do anything about it. You had somebody come in or trim them last year. but they wouldn't touch mine. Because they said, you wouldn't pay for it.
I guess I'm not sure if it was me or if it was Chris, but that's okay.
Whoever was there last summer.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I certainly would appreciate it because it's tough to really pick all those nuts up and everything and haul them away in that. So, but you just take right down there tomorrow and look at the ones that are on the outside from the tree, from the two trees.
Okay.
All right, sir. We'll have somebody take a look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to address the board? Mr. O'Rourke.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm a realtor in town here. And at your next meeting, you're going to be looking at the plan district development on Riverside Drive and St. Joseph Street. And it's my opinion that a very good development on that site would add probably an average of $10,000 in value to the each condominium in those units. So you're talking, you know, you could be adding $1 million worth of value with a good development versus a stripped down, just straight old gas station that doesn't add any value, could detract some value. But a good development there with access to the trail would probably add about $10,000 worth of value to those each individual condominium, and that's something that you should look at. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to address the board during the public appearance section? Hearing none, I'll close the public appearance section. And moving on to old item 4, presentation of the 2016 Green Bay Met sewage budget presentation. Mr. Sigmund, welcome.
Thank you.
Or I guess we should call it new water now.
You can call me. I'll answer you. Well, thank you for inviting me to come and speak to you again on our 2016 budget. I've got three items that Craig had asked me to speak to you on. One is the budget, the draft budget. It's still not final. Also, some information on our R2E2, our solids project that was underway. I have a video as part of that presentation, about a six-minute video. And also give you an update on our adaptive management project, some work we're doing in Silver Creek for the pilot project. What's this?
I think you're going to have to do it.
Oh, okay. I can do that.
I think I can. Maybe it's this part.
So at New Water, we are in the process of going through some strategic planning update work, and while we're not quite finished with that yet, we've identified a vision for the organization, and it is protecting our most valuable resource, water. So I want to lead with that. Priorities that we have for our 2016 year, and specifically budget year: on time, on budget completion of our R2E2 project. That project is about $160 million, so it's a very important project, and commissioners have reminded us that getting that done on time and on budget is going to be very important. Enhancing our safety and health management systems, not just for our own employees, but for visitors that we have coming to our facilities. Continuing the adaptive management pilot project that I'm going to talk to you about in a little bit. Implementing some optimization projects that we have around our facilities to both reduce cost and improve efficiency. Using asset management to improve service and also reduce cost. And then continue to be a trusted source of area water information. We've been working on that for the last couple of years. Just showing you the flows and loads. The ones for 12, 13, and 14 are actual, 15, and then the budgeted 16 are projected. What we're seeing is just a slight uptick in BOD after two consecutive years of a drop in BOD due to an industry choosing to do pretreatment, and also a slight uptick in suspended solids. Volume has stayed very consistent. That's in the red line over the years. So some of the drivers of the 2016 budget, I mentioned a slight increase in BOD and suspended solids, which gives us more units to be able to base the rates on. That's a good thing. We're going to be in the final year of increasing the budget to be able to pay for the R2E2 project debt, the debt service. Making sure that we have other capital, essential capital projects, even though we have tried to clear the decks as much as we could of other capital projects for the R2E2, we do have some projects that we have to keep going with. And then implementing the adaptive management pilot project. So that budget, just a summary here of expenses, break it into two categories, operations and maintenance expenses, and then also debt service and annual capital. The operations and maintenance, if you look at the column that says 2015 budget and then the 2016 budget, O&M is about a 3.2% increase over the 2015 budget, and then debt service is up 13.2% over the 2015 budget, all due to the R2E2 project, with total expenses up 7.8% over the 2015 budget. We have done a projection, as we do throughout the year, for where we're going to finish at the end of 2015, and that projection is to be slightly under the 2015 budget for expenses. If you start breaking down those O&M expenses, again, that overall was 3.2% increase. Where you're seeing the largest increase in the expenses is coming in a couple of categories. One is contracted services. Contracted services is up significantly. It's about the middle of the page, from about $1.8 million to $2.3 million. Now, the bulk of that, there's a little footnote on there, $450,000 of that increase is due to the adaptive management work that we're doing in Silver Creek, and that is covered by a Great Lakes Restoration Initiative grant. We got a 5-year grant for that project, but it shows up in expenses and then comes back out in revenue. And then the other, probably the other one that's typically of significance is salaries and benefits. Salaries and benefits are up 1.9% over the 2015 budget. One of the things you'll notice, our projection for 2015 actual is below the budget, and that's because we budget for all of our positions to be filled, but we've had a number of positions this year that we've had changeover, and we don't get them filled right away, so some of these positions stay vacant for a month or two, and some of them are couple more than that. So that's why the projected is going to be less than the budgeted for 2015. We're seeing power, I guess a couple other areas. Power's up about 5%. We're still waiting to hear where the Public Services Commission is going to rule on WPS's electricity rate increases. We should know later in the year on that. And then natural gas and fuel oil, we buy a lot of natural gas and use it in our facilities, and we signed an agreement to basically buy out ahead 18 months, and so that has allowed us to have about a 12% decrease in natural gas and fuel oil. It's not that we are reducing the amount, it's that the budget has gone down. So if you look at the distribution of those expenses on the previous slide, the bulk of it, 50%, is in salaries and benefits, with the rest being primarily categories of power, natural gas, fuel oil, has about 18%. Contracted services, 12%. Maintenance, 8%, and then falls into other categories for the rest of the budget. Wanted to touch on the R2E2 project. We had a commission meeting last week, and as we're trying to get into that last phase of the R2E2 project, wanted to explain what we're going to be doing in 2016. So we've got R2E2 broken up into three contracts, contract 33, 34, and 35. 33 was completed Last year, it was about a $6.5 million contract. It went really quite well. Contract 34, which is the largest piece of it, $131 million to build the heart of the R2E2 project. We're in the process with that now. We have just commission-approved a loan with the Clean Water Fund last week, and we're going to close on that in about a week and a half at about a 2.06% interest rate on the money. So in 34, just how the DNR does their projects in a Clean Water Fund, and CWF is Clean Water Fund, for our 2016 budget, which we're again collecting money, we collect money a year in advance so that we don't go onto the property tax rolls. It's going to be interest only. We really won't start paying principal on the loan with the Clean Water Fund until 2018, which means we collect it in our 2017 budget. So the debt service in 2016 is going to be interest only on contract 34. And we also just remind you that let you know contract 34, the DNR allows you to any facility work that's related to handling hauled waste or septage can be done at a 0% interest rate loan. And we were able to justify to the DNR about $10.8 million of the facilities. And so that's going to come in at a 0% interest loan over the 20-year period. So what we're going to do in 2016 budget is collect an additional $5.5 million for the R2E2 project. It's going to go into the rate stabilization for the R2E2 reserve. It will be used to pay for capital, and we would just reduce our borrowing for that project. But that allows us to get the R2E2 debt service amount to the point where we're going to be even from this point on. So instead of having a bit of a dip this year and then go back up again in 17, we had talked about 4 years ago of trying to get 9 to 10% rate increases through 2016, and that's so that $5.5 million will get us to that point. And then beginning in the 2017 budget, we will collect both principal and interest on that contract 34. It should be a fairly seamless transition. So if you look at the 2016 budget for this, specifically for the R2E2 project, there are three loans right now. One is the 9844 is the contract 33 loan. It's going to have a little over $1 million. We took out a general obligation bond in 2013, $20 million bond, 25 years. First 15 years, interest only. The last 10 will be paying principal as well as interest. So that's going to be about $704,000 in 16. And then the 9899, which is the contract 34, that $3.2 million will be interest only. And then the $5.5 million will get us up to a total collected for R2E2 of about $10.4 million. And again, that should stay stable for the rest of the remainder of the life of the loans. So when it all comes down to it for you as a customer, and then eventually goes down to your customers, the 2016 municipal rate, you're billed on five volume and strength parameters and then a fixed charge parameter. We then try to pull that together for a typical residential customer of what would a combined rate per 1,000 gallons, and that's about that 6.2%. But what really comes to you and goes to your customers is the volume is going to go down by about 2%. The R2E2 project is really concentrated in suspended solids at about 60% of the cost, and 40% of the cost is in biochemical oxygen demand. So that's where you see the major increases in the rate, once again, in those two parameters. And then phosphorus is up about 7%, and the total Kelvedon nitrogen down 2%, and then fixed charge 3.7%. So those are that's how it'll translate to rates to you as a municipality. We do a comparison every year, and we use the City of Green Bay. They're our largest customer. We calculate what the rate would be going to a typical, what we call a typical residential customer, discharging about 16,000 gallons a year or a quarter into the sewer system, about 64,000 gallons a year. That really does vary by community, but that's what we've picked. And then we calculate in the red line is what the City of Green Bay, the charge would be for that customer on an annual basis. And then we benchmark ourselves against some work that's done by the National Association of Clean Water Agencies. They do a national survey that we participate in. And this is for EPA Region 5, which is the five states, including Wisconsin. So we have typically stayed below and been parallel to the EPA Region 5 rate. You can see for 15, they're starting to converge. My guess is for 16, and talking with the City of Green Bay, that they're going to converge even more. So we are getting closer to that regional average, but we're still below that. So this is a summary for the 2016 budget. We're recommending that 6.2% increase in the combined municipal rate. O&M expenses increasing 3.2%. Electricity, we're budgeting for 6.6%. WPS has requested 9.4%. We'll find out once the Public Service Commission does their ruling on that. 11.9% increase in capital, and most of our interceptor debt is once again being offset using the interceptor cost recovery reserve that we have set up. So as we move on to next steps, we're having customer meetings. This is the first meeting that we have with the municipal entity. We're responding to any requests that we have to come in and meet. We've responding to inquiries as we receive them. We've received one from Craig Barrett. I have not got to that quite yet. I have been traveling, but we're going to get I've got the answers. I've just got to generate the email. And we will share all of those customer inquiries as well as our responses with the commission when we do the public hearing. So we'll publish the proposed budget in the newspaper. It'll be out at least 15 days in advance of the budget hearing and adoption meeting on December 2nd, where we will then we'll be making any tweaks or changes to the budget as we get information. Prior to that, 2 weeks before, we'll present to the commission and ask for their approval. And then we will notify the customers right away that at least a few of our customers don't make their rates final until they've received our rates. But we get it to, I know some of our customers are using our draft rates in setting up budgets. It just depends on everyone's cycle. So that's the status on the budget. Before I move on to the R2E2 project, are there any questions that you might have?
Does the board have any questions? Trustee Rafter.
That chart that you showed between the region average in
yes.
Green Bay, how would Alloway fare in that?
You know, I think Craig and I have talked about that. I think your rates, Craig, would they be a little higher? By the time we get our rate in there, I don't know how to go backwards on this. So.
Well, those Green Bay rates on there in that graph are a little higher than what we've seen in the past for the Green Bay rates. They were usually closer to around $20 a month, $22 a month, somewhere in that range. The Green Bay MEP charge to us, and I don't have that data here with me, but it is about $26 or $27 a month. Is what it runs for our customer for the Green Bay Met charge. So that's about 70% of our total bill. And based on, I would guess Green Bay is pretty close to the same. It's probably 70% of their bill.
It's actually, when you do the calculation for the City of Green Bay, it's pretty close to 50-50. So every community does vary. We've talked to various communities, and some use 80,000 gallons of water in a year for a customer. Some use less than 64,000 we've used for the city of Green Bay, so that does vary. It'll also depend on you know, what you consider to be the strength of your wastewater. Some communities have less infiltration inflow or maybe more impact from commercial that might change it. So, but for the city of Green Bay, it's about 50-50, and I think for Craig, we're a larger percentage of your bill than we are for the city of Green Bay.
And regardless of percentage, if we're just looking at dollar amount, would a Green Bay customer, residential customer, pay less than an Alloway customer for the same usage?
I do not know that. Certainly, you know, the new water rates are the same.
That's what I'm talking about.
The new water rates are the same. To all of our customers know that there is okay. there is no difference. There are two exceptions to these. One is for Procter & Gamble. I think we have a long-standing agreement with Procter & Gamble where they pay their capital bill separately, so their rates look different. But essentially, the O&M is the same. And then, as a result of a Public Service Commission ruling, Fox River Fiber and Industry in DePere has a different charge, and it differs mainly on the volume because of the interceptor system. They have a separate force main that conveys wastewater directly to our DePere facility.
Okay, thanks.
But everyone pays the same amount otherwise from us.
Okay. Trustee Harris?
Couple of questions on the revenues and the expenses. On the 2015 projected revenue compared to 2015 budget, and maybe you explained it and I just missed it, we're about 4.5% ahead of what was projected. What's causing that much of an increase in revenues for 2015?
There are a couple of reasons. One, the municipal rate is a little bit ahead, or the municipal amount is a little bit ahead of what we would expect. Volume has tended to lag so far this year. It's been a dry year up until the last couple of months. But the strength of the wastewater has been stronger, so the BOD and suspended solids is typically running ahead of where we budgeted. The other, and probably at least as significant, is hauled waste. We budget typically for in the vicinity of $350,000 a year of cost recovered from people who bring waste to us, whether it comes from people who are on septic systems or holding tanks, or the main reason is then there's some industries, cheese industries, that typically when the weather's good for them, they will take and land apply their waste. They have permits. But when it's wet or they just, for whatever reason, can't get in their field, they will bring that waste to us. And for the last couple of years, we've seen a pretty significant increase in that waste. We don't budget for it because we are the last resort for them. They will take it anywhere but us, and so we don't budget for the higher amount. So it has been, I think between that and the municipal strength is stronger than we had budgeted for. Those are the two reasons.
And then there's a memorandum that's included in the materials that we have talking about a salary survey.
Yes.
And it recommended that certain pay grades not have a change in salary, and other, I assume the way they're numbered, the higher paying salary positions would get an increase.
Correct.
What kind of salary increase are you projecting for that, for those individuals?
Well, the overall, we're looking at, across the entire organization, about 2.7% increase in overall salaries. One of the things that was talked about in the meeting last week that it was tabled till a meeting on the 14th of October was what's called a market adjustment. Basically, it's kind of moving the midpoint of a pay grade to kind of reflect the market. We did not get commission approval on that. So, but the study that was done has said that on the low end of the our pay grades, that we're a little ahead of the market by as much as 5% at the very low end. And on the high end of the market, the high end of the pay grades, we're about 4.6% behind the market. So it's a shifting of the line.
Okay.
Commission did not take action at our meeting last week, and so the consultant who did the salary survey is coming in on the 14th to talk with the commission.
And then one that will probably be near and dear to Trustee Green, the contracted services.
Yes.
What are we doing with the extra $450,000? It's along the lines of, just because we have it, why are we spending it?
Well, the adaptive management project, the overall grant is about $1.6 million over 5 years. The money is being used for a lot of things, and one of them is to hire a consultant to kind of run the process for us. They've been doing the soil sampling. They've been developing the plans. So there's a significant part of it with consultant. Some of the money is for actually paying to get some practices, some best management practices put onto some land. There is some money to pay for some of those practices. Some of the money is paid for, we did some public education activities, and we'll continue to do those. Trying to think of a list of some of it's for some work that UW Green Bay is going to be doing for us on the project in terms of monitoring and preparing some models for the project. So it's helping to pay for the outside services that beyond what our staff is going to be able to do on that project.
So would all of those things still be taking place if we didn't have the grant, or if the grant was a lower amount?
Yes, we budgeted in 2015 for those amounts, not knowing whether we were going to get the grant or not. We applied for the grant, hoping that we would get it, and then it's offsetting some in 16 or 15, and then it's going to offset some in 16. And when I said we budgeted in 2015 for some of those things, not knowing whether we'd get the grant.
Okay.
We just needed to do it.
And one more, and then I'm done.
Yes.
In terms of the O&M expenses, chemicals and solid waste disposal, the amounts that we're looking at for projected actuals in each of those are $100,000 less than what's in the budget, yet the 2016 budget is about $100,000 more on each of them. If we're able to come in lower for 2015, wouldn't we project something closer for 2016?
Not necessarily. The solid waste is one that we have brought down as much as we think we can over the years. It's not just hauling out trash and screenings and things that are normal. We are running our two incinerators for the most part all the time. And when we have a downtime with one of our incinerators, we have a period of time when we can accumulate solids in the facility and then try to catch back up. But if the incinerators would be down for any extended period of time, we would have to dewater that solids and then pay to have the solids landfilled. And so we do have an amount of money that would say that, this past year we haven't had to take quite as many loads to the landfill as we had budgeted for, and that's our goal. But we have the money in there because it is very expensive to take solids to landfill. The chemicals, in general, we're pretty consistent with use of chemicals in dewatering, and we don't add as much ferric chloride as we had planned on. That's really used for odor control or phosphorus control if the process is upset. Some of these can be due to timing. We'll get a bill for $120,000 of chemicals that might come in a month or two later. In general, I'll ask my staff about it, but they look and say, this is what we think we're going to need for the chemicals. And some things are repeatable from year to year. You're correct on that. I'll have to ask why. I do know on the solid waste side that it's a risk management issue.
Mm-hmm.
We try not to, and I'll have to ask on chemicals, but I'll get back to Craig.
Okay. Thank you for looking. Okay,
anybody else? Any other trustee questions? Trustee Duff.
The $450,000 grant, what department did that come from?
That's from EPA.
Okay.
And Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. I'm not quite sure how far you'd slice it past that.
And did the New Water apply for any of the funds that were announced back in May in regards to the USDA and made available to the Conservation of Clearwater?
We did. We applied for an RCPP, that's what it is, yep. Resource Conservation Something Program. We were not successful on that. They're very competitive. I think we just happen to match up better with the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative grant.
And there was talk last year at this time about looking for the additional funding for the phosphorus recovery program. Is that something that was looked into, reviewed, or considered?
Phosphorus?
There was
grant money?
Yes.
I'm drawing a blank on that. We try to apply for any grant money that we think is at all possible. The state has had a zero, and most of the money has come even through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and we are partnering with Allegheny and Brown County to try to apply for another grant for this next year, but I'm not sure on the phosphorus.
And then changing directions completely, I noticed that the staff made a recommendation in regards to not changing the amount of subsidy towards insurance. And I'm wondering, you know, that it was, I think, currently subsidized on a monthly basis around $574 a month or something. And I am just curious as to whether that will at some point in time be changed, because they had said for this year, this coming year, that they were going to remain as is, with no projected thought for 2017.
Well, I guess in terms of subsidy, and I guess all I can think of is the employee share versus the employer share. And in 2015, the premium, you know, the premium set by the we're in this state of Wisconsin local government employee pool. For insurance, health insurance, and the employees paid 12% of the premium, and the employer, New Water, paid 88%. In 2016, the recommendation is to go to employees paying 14% of the premium, so we push that up 2%, and the employer's paying the rest. So what we saw in some of the survey work that we had done in 2013 of mostly municipal and some private entities is that right now about a 15% employee share is what we're seeing in the marketplace. It's not just the whole story when you talk about the employee share. It really depends on the plan design. It depends on whether it's a high deductible and whether you have a high health savings account. But we chose and recommended this year and the commission approved to move to a 14% employee contribution to stay with the HMO option, which is a traditional health plan, and then likely go to the high deductible health plan in 2017 if the premiums continue to move in the direction that we're seeing this year.
All right, and then was there a particular reason why we didn't have the why you changed format in regards to how you presented the budget to us for review? I mean, we saw last year an actual line-by-line analysis of everything, and starting at the top with the salaries on out to everything else. I know these are highlighted, and there are some areas that are given, but I'm curious, as previously last year we had questions in regards to the actual percentages of the amount of pay increase for those people at the upper end of the spectrum there, and with it just put in as a line item overall, there is no discernment as to accountability of the actual funds. In other words, we're showing justification but not accountability. And I'm just curious as to why the change in the methodology of the looking at, or as presented to us.
Well, as I look at the budget document that we have, and
typically it's our revenue and expenses sheet. It's appeared to be the same for me. I think the memo that we talked about with our commission this past week was the recommendation for how the market adjustment, so again, there's two components. There's a market adjustment, and then there's a merit that someone, that an employee might have as they move through the pay grade. The merit part hasn't changed. It's the market adjustment that the consultant has come back with and said that the market has changed. So I'm not sure that we presented it any differently than we have. We've never given presented in the budget the individual pay for any particular pay grade or individual, but so I'm not quite sure.
Actually, last year at this time, it was something that was a quite concern to our then president, and I recall sitting in the meetings with him where we discussed this.
Yeah,
and there, where there was seemingly I can't think of an appropriate word to use, and I don't want to offend, and I don't want to misrepresent, but that there was a different amount which was garnered for those at the upper pay scale, basically saying that, you know, if you look at someone who's up in the upper end of the pay scale and they get a 3% or 5% raise, that that's a good deal more than the person who's getting that adjustment of 1% to 3% lower end.
That's correct.
And that was a point of contention last year at this time.
Well, last year what we had done, again, the market adjustment I think we recommended, which was adopted, was a 1.6% across the board market adjustment because we hadn't done the detailed survey that was going to be done in 15. And then anyone who was in their pay grade that had, you know, was eligible for a merit adjustment with appropriate performance would have got a merit adjustment. So I think the difference that we're seeing this in people still have the ability to get a merit adjustment if it's within the pay grade and they've got good performance. What we're seeing is the market adjustment, the adjusting of that kind of a midpoint of their range is different. In 2000, recommended different for 16 than it was for 15. But 15, it was a recommended across the board percentages. And yes, it makes a difference in dollars whether you're at the lower end of the wage scale than at the higher end, but it was a certain percentage across the board.
So consideration and methodology has changed this year from what it was last year.
Well, not the methodology of the structure. We went out and did the survey, and the survey came back and told us that you know, we survey each position, and they're in the pay ranges. And what the survey has told us, at least for the group that we've surveyed, is that there has been, since the last time we did the detailed survey was 2011, there has been a shift in what's paid at kind of the lower end of the pay scale versus what's paid at the higher end of the market or the management side. That's what it's telling us, is there is a shift.
And in regards to those people who have left and need to be replaced, at what level are they? Are they to be replaced with someone who would be at a lower pay scale coming in, or is this a skill position or a higher level performance position?
Well, it depends on, you know, I think we had two operators in 2000, two treatment operators in 2015 who left to go to different locations, and our policy is to bring in a new employee into that pay grade at no higher than the midpoint or control point of the pay grade.
Okay, because the swing on that was about over $1 million from where you currently stood without replacement into where your projected figures were for upcoming 2016.
$1 million. I guess I'm not quite sure on that.
I would have to look back here on the paperwork to see if I could find it.
You're talking about the 2015 projected at 9.3 mil, and then the 2016 budget bumps it up by about 500,000 to 9.8.
$450,109 on that specifically. And then the RAF has already addressed the other issue in regards to the other $450,000. So I guess it would be half, $450,109.
As I look at our 2016 budget, our salaries and benefits budget for 2015 was $9.6 million. Our budget, salaries and benefits budget for 2016 is $9.8 million, or about $184,000 more. So I'm not quite sure where the numbers are coming from.
Well, that next column, right in the middle, between the smack dab between the two of them, is that $9,364,124. And what I'm saying is that I was asking was in regards to the replacement level of people that will be coming in. I'm trying to figure out where you're going to save some dollars and cents down the line here, because sooner or later, I mean, it doesn't mean a whole lot to the folks maybe at the Green Bay or at the New Water, but it pinches us each time we have to raise our rates because we can add additional dollars.
What's the date on the top of that page that you've got? It'll say... Does it say second budget workshop 9:30 of 2015?
I think this is the page he's looking at.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the 2016 war on expenses. Oh, okay. Part of this.
Yeah, there's no date listed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The 9:30.
There is a date listed.
Yes, that's an out of date number. I apologize for that. The number that we have on the most current is the actual is 95. We're projecting the actual to be 9538. So I apologize for that.
All right, so that's there's a difference, 200,000. Okay.
I didn't have to get that updated.
Well, I think the general frustration is that for the 2015 O&M budget. Was 19 mil, and then the 2016 budget is about 600,000 more than that. I think where we're stumbling through is if you take a look at what you actually spent, it was 18.4. So if you look at what you're projected to spend in 2015 versus 2016 budget, that's a $1.2 million difference. I mean, that's what jumps out at me. I mean, I know when we get our budget and we look at what was budgeted last year and what was actually spent, and if it was significantly less, which this year it was. You guys spent about $600,000 less than you had budgeted for 2015, or will spend about $600,000. I mean, our challenge is always, okay, why can't we spend that less next year in our budget? Because apparently we're either efficient or we're doing some things right, and we were, I think it's great when you spend $600,000 less than your budget, but then we're taking, that less and increasing it by $1.2 million to get to the 2016 budget. And I think that's where we have some frustration in that.
I understand. I'll just tell you, as we go through our budgeting process every year, the team starts and goes back to what is it you need, and they certainly do look at what they spent this year. Did we overestimate? Did we overspend? Did something get carried over? And we try to budget as closely as we can. I do have we do just try. We don't try to over budget in expenses. I will agree with you. We are going to spend less. We'll be probably 93% of expenses spent this year. I would expect that that's where we're going to finish.
Any other board questions at this point? Trustee Dart.
So if you underspend your budget and the fees are collected to maintain that budget, where does that extra money go?
Well, we go through this. This is something we look at every year. So I'm guessing this year we're going to have more revenue coming in than we budgeted for, probably 105% of budgeted revenue. Let's say 95% of, that's where we finished last year. We were 95% of budget expenses, 105% of budget of revenue. It doesn't become a surplus until the accountants are done with it. Mm-hmm.
and we go through and look at, you know, what is depreciation? How do we do for depreciation? Do we have any loss or gain on disposal of fixed assets? And last year we had, we probably disposed of more assets than we planned for. And then when the money is, when it's all done, if we have a net income, which we did last year, it goes into a rate stabilization reserve that the commission can use in subsequent years. But we don't really know that it's until the auditor's done, which sure. is typically in April.
I understand that. So is there anything in that reserve now?
There is about, it's about $2.5 million in the rate stabilization reserve right now. We had about $1.5 million last year. So there's a separate reserve for the R2E2 project that's dedicated to paying for capital expenses. But so the commission has the opportunity to decide if they want to use that rate stabilization reserve coming up as for a budget of almost $35 to $40 million. $2.5 million of rate stabilization reserve is kind of on the low end of it, and that'll be the commission's decision to how they want to use it.
So let's say then we have if there's surplus this year and there's surplus next year, and it goes in that, then that can help offset the rates in the future. Is that what you're saying?
What we'd likely do, instead of kind of buying down the rates because then it's going to come pop back up the next year, what we would likely do is take it and use it for offsetting one-time expenses, say a capital project. We paid for a capital project instead of going out and borrowing for it and putting it on the debt service. But yeah, that's likely how we're going to use the money.
If you go with the projected budget of $19,630,475 and you do 93% of that, it actually brings you down below your 2015 projected budget of $18,400. It ends up being $18,256,347.75. Is that 75 cents I want to argue about.
Okay.
But what I'm thinking is if the economy of estimations there, should the budget be looked at again for areas that are still capable of being weaned back, for lack of a better word.
We're not done with it yet, so if there's staff still has an opportunity that we think we can reduce the expenses cost without compromising the project, we certainly do it.
Thank you.
Trustee Green.
So rate stabilization fund, how high has it been in the past?
Oh, it hasn't been, since I've been there, it hasn't been more than $1 million. It's really been $1 million, I think, for the last 4 or 5 years. I can't tell you how high it was. I've been with the district 8 years. It could have been higher before that. Before I had started, the district actually would collect money to fund a rate stabilization fund to try to build it up to a certain amount. We haven't done that since I've been there.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how high it's ever been, but in recent memory, it's not been more than $1 million.
Okay, I'm just getting pretty flabbergasted because $2.5 million doesn't sound like much in your budget, quote unquote. However, with the rate increases everybody has had over the years, why aren't we using it to pay down debt, to stabilize rates, et cetera, instead of keeping doing the jumps that you've done? I guess if you've never had it before, why have we got a slush fund now? Why aren't we using it to deal with the rate increases?
Well, we haven't had net income, positive net income, until, 14. We might have had some in 13, okay. But 14 was the first time.
So I would hope we'd use some of that for the next year.
We again, we'll present to the commission and my thought would be not to use it to just kind of bring a rate down and it's going to pop right back up, but to use it for
keeping
capital.
It flat
well,
would be
or
nice.
pick a again, use a rate stabilization. If you buy it down and you're buying down ongoing expenses, they will just come right back up. We will look to use it for
better use than letting it sit there is just what I'm getting at. So especially in the last 5 years with the rate increases, any relief would be most helpful for people.
I wish Clarence was still here because he would be able to
I do too.
He would be able to give us a better take on that, because when he was on the board, mm-hmm. which is many years ago now, they did not have that additional funding in there. And I'm just curious because the accumulation of this $2.5 million in reserve, over what period of time has that been accumulated?
Well, it went up about $1.5 million last year as a result of our audit for 2014, so that money would have been credited as a result of net income from last year.
And is that net income increase due to that healthy rate increase of 9.8%?
No, that the rate increase has been targeted on the R2E2 project. The net income is keeping expenses down. The net income is the revenue we get that's unexpected revenue from the hauled waste. The net income is potentially, not disposing or disposing of assets. I mean, there's a lot of pieces that have to go into it before you can determine what is net income.
On your, and I'm sure there's an answer to this, but I don't know what the numbers are. Do you have fixed sets for annual percent constant, debt coverage factor, capitalization rate? I mean, do you have targets that you're trying to hit on that, or have those been established that we might be able to have an idea where they're at? Because that would actually give you a part of us, at least a better idea of where the parameters are, because otherwise it seems as though there's a significant swing in both directions.
Well, debt coverage, since we're not out into the bond market very often, coverage is not something that's required by the Clean Water Fund. But we calculate it every year, and I'm trying to think of if we're at 113% for debt coverage. I'm thinking that's probably the calculation that we would have done for 15. Mm-hmm. Not especially high.
But is, and I'm sorry, but is an ongoing, for lack of a better way to put it, but is an ongoing, quote unquote, business, nonprofit entity, it still has to have parameters of reach in regards to expenses and income. So, I mean, it's not like it's irrelevant. I mean, it should be something that...
Well, we calculate it every year, which is not something that we have to report to a bonding agency that changes our bonding rate based on...
I don't care about the bonding agency. I mean, when we have to talk to the citizens and they want to know why things are going up.
Well, I can tell you what our coverage is. It's about 112-113%. We calculate it every year based on the budget.
Any other board comment?
One more question, if I could. I assume it's on the document labeled 2016 First Budget Workshop. With the 2014 results,
okay.
Is there, so this, just so you see the same page, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. For the 2014 results, what amount went, maybe I'm just not reading the line item properly, but which amount went into the reserve for 2014?
You will not see that on the budget. That will be on the balance sheet. The audit. So it's not on the budget, it'll be on the balance sheet.
So in essence, this is an income statement, not a balance sheet.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
It brings into account our debt service payment. And if you look at the balance sheet, it talks about depreciation. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't show at all. This shows principal and interest. There's separate documents.
Understood. I just couldn't identify it.
Yeah, I can get it for you.
Any other more questions?
Have we asked you enough questions tonight?
No, I think you're I still got plenty of time. if you wish, I still have a couple other things talk about or not, whichever you'd like.
No, absolutely. Please go ahead.
Well, I'm going to move on to the R2E2 project. Which we've talked about, and that has consumed up a lot of money. In August of this year, we started contractors mobilization. If you're welcome to come out to the facilities, we'd be happy to show you. There's a huge hole in the ground, and they're working through putting up the sheet pile around it. So some of the milestones were our stormwater detention pond is being built right now. It's due to come online in November of this year. That's the first deliverable. Don't have it up there. But then starting in early 2018 is when the contractor is going to be turning over to us the facilities, dewatering, incineration first, and then the anaerobic digesters and biogas facilities. For those of you that may have seen the tank that was built for the Brown County Water Authority, it was the post-tensioned concrete tank, that your water tank. Our digester is going to be two of them, probably about that same size. So that's going to be built in the same manner. So that's coming on. And then final completion is due to be in mid-2018. Last piece of the project is going to be demolishing the existing facilities once we've got the new ones up. So
I am going to try to see if I can bring a video up. Maybe I'll be successful. You may recognize some of the people here. We'll do our best with the volume.
Facility building.
Tommy Zedrick.
Is that?
Zedrick, film star.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
Yes.
The value of water. It's something we take for granted here in Northeast Wisconsin, yet it's something we all enjoy and need. We have an abundance of streams, rivers, and lakes, which are essential to our economy, our ecosystem, and our well-being. Water is the foundation for a sustainable community. At New Water, the brand of the Green Bay Metropolitan Sewerage District, caring for water is a 24-hour day, 7-day a week, 365-day-a-year job, and it has been since it was established in 1931.
We are a wholesale provider of municipal wastewater services. Our coverage area is 285 square miles. We serve approximately 219,000 people, and 18 municipalities are in our service area. The plant you're looking at right now is the Green Bay facility, which average daily flow through the plant is about 30 million gallons per day. We also operate a facility in DePere, which is called the DePere facility, located about 7 miles south of here, which treats on an average of 8 million gallons per day.
To meet the needs of the present and future, New Water and stakeholders developed an innovative plan to replace the solids handling system at its Green Bay facility, resource recovery and electrical energy, simply known as R2E2.
We're standing in front of our existing solids handling facility building, and this will be going down or demolished as part of the R2E2 project. And we'll be putting up our new facility just to the south of the existing facility with our digesters and our new solids handling building.
It's needed, in my mind, for three different reasons. One, the age of the existing equipment. So the majority of the equipment here was put in and installed in the mid-70s. Secondarily, the new water and environmental regulations. And thirdly, to make sure that we have the type of operation that's sustainable for the long term and provides the best bang for the buck for our customers.
The approach to the R2E2 project was a collaborative effort. A stakeholder advisory group investigated solids handling solutions not only across the United States, but around the globe, in an effort to find the best solution for our community.
There was a lot of exchange of information and a lot of dialogue on the approach to the project and the cost, which we feel as customers was very positive for both parties.
R2E2 represents a new philosophy for New Water. Now the organization treats what's sent to the facility not as a waste, but as a resource stream to be recovered and reused.
The R2E2 project is to take that material, the solid material, and try to
generate electricity from that methane gas to offset the amount that we have to buy from the public utility. Recover as much of the heat that comes in from generating electricity or from the other processes and use that in our facility. R2E2 embraces both environmental stewardship and resource recovery as its guiding principles. The electricity generated by R2E2 each year could power about 90,000 household light bulbs. In addition, the mineral strulite will be extracted from the waste stream and made into a commercial fertilizer, which will bring in an additional $400,000 in revenue each year.
Looking at the waste as a resource really turns the operation around, using the right amount of equipment, the right type of equipment, to perform those operations, to keep the costs low, and to have a sustainable operation.
Resource recovery and energy recovery are very important because in a project of this size, the amount of savings that you can generate by recovering whatever energy and resources you can becomes a very significant cost savings overall. And when you look at the long-term life of the facility, you know, it's a huge dollar number, which really not only benefits the facility in terms of its operation, but it benefits us as customers.
As the project evolves, New Water staff is front and center on this exciting new journey of resource recovery.
Our staff has kind of caught the fever of the resource recovery, and they keep thinking about different ways and different things that we might recover. It's just a journey as to where we want to be from moving again from that simply treating wastewater that is at the lowest cost possible to doing the best we can, looking at that material as a resource and claiming as many things that we can economically claim from what is considered new waste.
It's an amazing achievement, one that NACWA wants to applaud. And let me just say here, congratulations to Tom, to the staff of New Water, to the board of New Water for this amazing effort. We look forward to bringing it to the nation's attention and ultimately having other utilities follow in New Water's footsteps. New Water, in this instance, is nothing more or less than a pioneer for the utility of the future. And we thank you for all the work you have done in helping us make this effort a success.
Show it to you.
No, that was enjoyable. Very nicely done.
Thank you for allowing Craig to be a part of that.
Yeah, now we just have to pay a Screen Actors Guild.
Well, it is. There is a fee that was involved.
How much did he pay?
He got his normal. He got his usual. So that's our 2E2 project. It is moving along quite well. We just after we started the project, the bids did come in higher than we expected. The interest rate is a lot lower than we expected, which allowed the payments to actually be lower than we had budgeted for. We sat down with the contractor and have negotiated, signed a change order for about $650,000 of cost reductions right off the bat on the project. We found some things that we could pull out of the project. We're working on some other things which should be in the vicinity of $400,000. So we're going to start the project with a negative change order of about $1 million as we move forward, which is a good way to start. We very rarely start something like that. So last thing I wanted to talk to you about is adaptive management. Again, this is another long-term journey for us, but we're starting with this pilot work that we're doing in Silver Creek. So I've given this presentation a couple of times. This one element was, I was down in Chicago at a meeting and used the phrase, we're looking for partners, and that's what we are in because we've got to find people who want to work for us out in the watershed, who want to work with us, not for us. So some of the background condensed, I've got just a few slides here. Some of this you've already seen before. This is 2011, spring. It's the you can see the on the right, it's the Fox River kind of coming. This
going in past our treatment facility on the right, outlet into the bay. And then on the left, what you're seeing is that same day, but looking at it where you can see Duck Creek, which also has a pretty significant contribution. And what we tell people, you know, there's the researchers have said that there's about 14 events a year that account for 80% of the sediment and nutrients that are delivered to the bay. So it's very episodic, it's wet weather driven, and it tends to be driven when land does not have cover on it. So coming out of winter into spring. And the Fox River contributes a third of all the nutrients that make it into Lake Michigan. That's one of the reasons why the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative has funded projects in our areas to try to address some of these issues. The tan part may be washed out a little bit, but this is from the data that New Waters collected over almost the last 30 years. It was fed into the total maximum daily load. And what you're seeing with the tan up on top is the total load that's delivered at the mouth of Fox River to the bay. This happens to be phosphorus. So you can see that it is very, and this is averaged, each point is the average of a year's worth of data. So you can see that there's a lot of variability. If you look at kind of at the low point or around a million pounds of phosphorus, it's got up to 2.5 million pounds in any one particular year. So it's quite a bit of variability. Even lately. One of the things at the bottom is what you're seeing is the municipal industrial treatment facilities, both from the lower Fox, which is downstream of the discharge of Lake Winnebago, and the upper Fox Wolf, which is Lake Winnebago and up. And you see that it's a contribution, but not a significant contribution. And since the 90s, Clean Water Act that was done with EPA, both with industry and municipalities, has done its job for phosphorus. We've reduced phosphorus, but we're still seeing some pretty significant numbers. And that TMDL target, the total maximum daily load work that EPA had done, said that's the target that they want to have coming. That whole tan line needs to come down and be below 500,000 pounds of phosphorus. So we've got some work to do. So question I answer for people, you know, is why is New Water in the watershed? Why do we bother? New Water, if you remember, there's, you know, a couple of million pounds of phosphorus discharged each year to the Fox River. New Water discharges, its baseline is almost 32,000 pounds. Not zero, but about 2.5% of the total amount. And our allocation from the TMDL is about 23,000, so we've got to get down over 9,000 pounds of phosphorus. We've got to reduce that. The problem is, to do it in a manner, using just the traditional tools at a treatment plant that we have, we've estimated that would cost us in excess of $220 million, and by the time we get there, it's going to be quite a bit more, plus another $2 million a year in chemical costs and electricity costs to do that high level of treatment. So we've said, and I think anybody we talked to said, that's not a good use of your money. Is there another way? And we worked with the DNR, along with other utilities, to say, is there some other way? We've got trading is an option, pollutant or water quality trading, and then adaptive management, which is the option that we're moving forward with. So what we've got to make a decision in late 2018, which way we're going to go. Are we going to spend that $220 million, or are we going to try adaptive management or trading? And so we've got to make that decision in time for our next permit renewal. To try to gather some information to let us make a good decision, we said we're going to do a pilot project. Silver Creek is a 4,800-acre sub-watershed of Duck Creek, so you can see it discharges into the bay. It's about 2,400 acres under tillage. It's very representative of the rest of the watershed, and the Oneida Tribe owns about half of those tillable acres. So we kind of looked at it and said, this is an opportunity, if the Oneidas are a willing partner, this is an opportunity to actually get some good information. So we started our pilot project in 2013, late 2013, and have been working on it, did some work in 14 and 15. We actually took soil samples, working on nutrient management plans, working on conservation plans, and we hope to have some agreements this year to start putting in some practices, which would likely go in next year. Just an example, one of the things we did, normally, I'm not a farmer, but normally an ag agent would go out and take a soil sample every 5 acres and then take that and do the parameters on that and then average all of those samples for the entire field that's being done. So you get one number, you get a number of, this field has a average concentration of 25 milligrams per liter of phosphorus. Most people in agriculture say that you need probably about 30 milligrams per liter of soil phosphorus. That's about the right amount to actually have good crop production. So what we did was we said, well, we want a little bit more information since we're doing the pilot. We took our samples not on 5 acre grids but on 2.5 acre grids. So what we've got is about 4 times the number of samples. And then what we also did was not aggregated up into one big field, but we kept it separate. So what you can see here in a couple of fields, I'm kind of focused on the one on the top part of it. The red is 100 to as much as 500 parts per million of phosphorus in each of those samples. And then the light blue is 3 to 15. So you can see across that field, there are some areas where there are some really significant high levels of phosphorus, and that field might have come back as saying that it's got 35 milligrams per liter of phosphorus. So that kind of information is helping us to target better where we want to put some management practices to reduce the runoff of sediment and phosphorus. So that's kind of we're also doing some work, since it really matters is what's in the stream, doing some biological assessments, and that's the Oneida tribe is doing most of that work. So I think I'm just about. So those are, I didn't pull a lot of slides of any of the projects, but.
Can you back up to that slide? That's really interesting.
I would like to think I can.
Press P.
Oh, there you go. Where you have their 4 red ones, right, like. Almost in the center. Yeah. And then there's green right up above it. What kind of accounts for that? That's a big difference.
No.
It's such a short. Yes.
Some of the things.
2.5 acres.
One, this, there was a historic farmstead here. This was a, one of these has had a manure pit.
Okay.
And sometimes you'll see probably the reason for this is close to the road, and it probably was close to the barn. I do not know, but something likely existed there in history, and there was just a significant, because a farmer would not apply manure, in big chunks like that unless it was close to a structure. So I don't know I do know that there was a farmstead there, and that's gone, and there's a manure pit, and that kind of explains some of the things. But
is the phosphorus on the surface, or does it go deep into the ground?
Well, I'm guessing they probably did a core of about 12 to 18 inches. Phosphorus tends to adhere to organic material. There is some soluble phosphorus. Most people think that phosphorus, just adheres to the soil and stays with the soil. So what you get is phosphorus washing up. But there is some phosphorus that is soluble that it can actually. A number of these fields are tiled for drain tiles, and any soluble phosphorus can get through the drain tile and make. So there's lots of paths for it. One of the reasons, kind of
show people that there's a lot that's going to go on in this. I think the pilot work is, I describe it as we're kicking the tires to see if we can really make adaptive management. Can we actually enter into agreements with people that aren't forced to enter into agreements with us, and that they will put some best management practices, that they will not apply nutrients, that they will do any number of things? Can we actually get this kind of cooperation, and can we get it to be long-term? Bill Hayes uses permanent, but long enough term that we can actually not repeat this cycle. So these are some of the things we're trying to find out in a very short amount of time. I think the results so far are encouraging, but there are some that I think we had 119 of 120 fields gave us permission to do a free soil sample. We'd only share the information with them. We'd go out and do it with our forces. So we had you say, why didn't you get 120 out of 120? One of the farmers said, you're from government, I'm not going to deal with you. So it's going to be interesting, as we kind of work through, and can we form partnerships with agricultural producers to make some of these improvements actually improve the water quality, and probably more important for you as ratepayers, not have to spend that $220 million.
Well, I think it's a very creative solution to look at. I'm glad that you guys are running the pilot program and taking a serious look at it, because that seems to be the better way to go if we can get the partnerships that you need.
We hope so.
How soon do you hope to start seeing results from the pilot?
Well, it's nature. We're not sure. Some of these things, if we clean up, we've known that there are some parts of the stream where nutrients are applied or the stream bank is broken down, there's not a cover crop put on, and this material just washes right into the stream. So we do see some opportunities for some quick wins. Question will be, how long is it going to take to kind of bring it into compliance?
Quick question, as you talk about Duck Creek and you talk about the Fox River, with the East River that ultimately flows into the Fox River, has there been any discussion on the East River? Because that's rolling through a lot of farmland as well. With a lot of
the East River is going to be a tough nut to crack as well, but we started with one we thought we could actually get some traction on. We're also not just looking for agricultural partners, but there's other point sources who are going to be under the same rules. Typically some of the paper mills or food producers, some of the other. Now they're looking at their different ways to treat this, but we're also looking to say, can we partner with some other industrial or municipal treatment facilities and also municipalities that have stormwater needs, to try to find ways to pool the resources to actually, we think this is the place where we're going to have the biggest return on investing. So, we're looking for partners that actually want to put on the practices. We're also looking for partners that actually need to make some improvements. Okay. I have taken up a lot of your time.
No, it's been well worth it. And thank you for answering the question. Trustee Rapp.
Could I go back to the R2-D2 project?
Yes, E2, because I do not have a license for the other
Star Wars.
No, for the R2-D2 project, 2018, it's live, right? Can we tell our residents that their rates will not stabilize but go down at that time?
Well, I think I'm never going to tell you that your rates are going to go down, because I can't. But what I will tell you is that our projections are that once we are producing electricity, it'll depend on how much. We've got a fairly nominal amount of fault waste coming in. We hope to get some more high strength waste. We believe we can knock our electricity bill down by about $2 million.
So that would be your personal utility bill?
That's what we pay now. That's what we pay WPS. Yep. Public Service Commission has continued to push the fixed rate up, which is making some of those savings a little harder to get. But in the vicinity of the $2 million, and then we are under contract with provider of technology to produce this Struvite material, which is a slow-release fertilizer, and we anticipate generating about $400,000 a year of revenue. So that money will go back, and when we won't have to buy utility electricity, and then that $400,000 or whatever it is will come back and reduce our costs. That's where all the money is going to go, is to reduce our costs.
The actual production of electricity from biodigesters in relation to methane production depends on the quality of the methane that's produced and the ability to be able to continuously run those generators. In answer to Penny's question in regards to that spot there, that could have been a feedlot or a transfer site or a dumping station that Farmer had used at one time. Something else you just said. Struvite is also what causes, that's what
kidney stones.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to generate a lot more than you would generate. Hopefully.
Any other questions for Tom? Well, thank you, Tom. You made a nice long presentation. Thanks for answering the questions.
I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you. You certainly show a lot of interest in this. All of our customers do not, so you have tend to speak for a lot of the other customers, and I appreciate that. I know our commission does as well. So I'll take the information, the questions that you've asked, and take them to heart, and we'll make what changes we can.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody can wake up now. All right. Item number 6, water foreman job description. A copy of the job description as proposed was contained in the packet for the water utility foreman. There's also a recommended salary range of $55,919 to $62,456, depending upon qualifications. Do I have a motion concerning the adoption of the job description and approval of the salary range as presented? Trustee Rafter.
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Dennis. Any discussion? What's discussion?
Craig, can you just tell me if that's the same job description that we had prior, or did we make any changes based on some need we might?
They were very minor, just cleaned up the grammar a little bit, a few minor updates, but no, it's basically the same thing as before. I brought this forward because we didn't actually have a job description and a salary range when we started the process, so that's why we brought this forward, so you had a chance to look at it.
Yep. Any other questions or discussion? Trustee Rafter.
And Craig, the salary range, is that based on the recent survey that was just done?
Okay. Any other questions or discussion by the board? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Job description and salary range approved. New business item number 7, consent agenda. Hearing no objection, I'd like to take A, B, there is no C. A, B, D, and E.
Oops, I happened to see that.
Wasn't important. So, hearing no objection, I'd like a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented. Is there such a motion? Trustee Dennis. Is there a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion concerning approval of the consent agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda approved. Reports and discussion. Item number 8, discussion regarding possible ordinance prohibiting 24-hour operations in the village. I just talked briefly with Trevor this afternoon, and Brad apparently was fielding phone calls about that.
Yes.
I mean, what do people think we were trying to do?
What were we trying to do? Exactly.
Oh, they were curious what we were trying to do.
There was concerns about what does that do. Oh, thank you. Some of the concerns that were brought forward, what would that do to some of the nursing homes, CVRFs, because if you're looking at creating something, it's got to be equal to everybody. So, that was some of the concerns.
Well, we might have to
We don't have to get Dennis to weigh in on that. I mean, you know, I mean, clearly if you say no 24-hour, maybe Trevor's got the information, but if you clearly say no 24-hour business operations, I mean, that would include the CBRFs, and clearly that would not be the intention. I think we're thinking about is gas stations being lit up 24/7. And, you know, personally, I wouldn't have any problem, for example, if Webster Market wanted to stay open 24 hours. But I think it's the gas station traffic, and I guess the question is, can we be selective in terms of what businesses we apply a 24-hour, you know, off-limits ordinance to?
I did speak with Dennis, and he said that he would recommend not enforcing it unless you enforced it across the board. He said it might actually even be outside of our policing powers as a village. Looking at a lot of other municipalities, I could not find any municipality that had an ordinance that prohibited 24-hour operations. I guess it's typically up to the business. I did call around to the three gas stations within the village and see what their hours of operation are. Typically, it's 5 to 11, 5 to 10, and then the mobile on the south end is 5 to midnight. I did ask Rick Locknell about crime increasing, and he said it's just really hard to tell because typically it's different by neighborhood. So it's hard to get comparison with something like that now.
Would we be able to regulate that if, for example, we're not regulated, but put in the form of agreement, if, for example, somebody comes to us and they have to rezone a particular property, we can say, could the board say we'd be happy to rezone it for your particular use, but as a condition to the rezone, you have to agree that your hours of operation will be 5 a.m. to 11 o'clock or midnight. I suspect people may be able to do that.
Dennis wasn't sure, but my opinion on that is as long as it would, the condition would be to promote the safety and welfare of the residents, I think you could make that case.
Yeah, because if somebody wants, and I get it, I think, you know, probably some overreaching ordinance that prohibits 24-hour operations, but only as to certain kinds of businesses, probably is something we don't necessarily want to get in the middle of. But I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, we might have the ability, because if somebody wants a rezone, they're asking us for something, and we could just say no, we're not interested in rezoning the parcel. But I would think it would be within our jurisdictions, and then it's pretty much a matter of contract. It's not a matter of ordinance. Say, fine, we'll rezone him, but you've got to agree to something that makes us happy on the rezone. So I suspect we could do that. If we're talking.
And could we do that in a PDD situation? If someone's asking for a PDD, they're asking us for something.
I think it's the same thing.
I would think we would almost have an easier time doing it based on the PDD than on the zoning, because that's what PDD is.
Well, and then we'd also need to make sure that if that's part of the PDD process, that ultimately that becomes a deed restriction. Because, I mean, say, for example, we let a gas station go someplace on a rezone or a PDD and said, okay, fine, but you can only be open until midnight. And they say, fine, we agree with you, but we don't deed restrict the property. They can sell it to somebody else who didn't agree with us, and they might have some flexibility to get around that. But Trustee Raffin.
I know this board's had discussion before about putting ordinances in place for problems that don't exist and that we think might exist. First question I would ask is, do we have an overabundance of police calls at the current gas stations? And because that seems to be the argument, that having them overnight or open over 24 hours is going to cause trouble. We're not experiencing that, and we could always act upon it if we had a problem. We also We have other ordinances, I'm sure, in place on loitering and all kinds of other things that would prohibit or at least allow us to act on those types of activities. So,
well, I think the, you know, the primary issue where it started coming up was when Quick Trip wanted to relocate to the diocesan property, and we had the condo residents that were up in arms that, you know, it would be 24/7, and we'd have to look at the lights all night, hear the traffic all night. And that's what really, I mean, you know, started at least the discussion anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of a tribute in a way to the PDD process, you know, because the village has always been, I think, pretty diligent in ensuring that residences that abut proper or commercial properties, you know, we put berms in and we screen things so that it's as least of a distraction to the residences as it can be. So I think the PDD process works pretty good to mitigate against some of the harms that our residential folks might suffer because of commercial development. Trustee Green?
Well, I know this came up too because they brought statistics on that, and I'd love to see them because they didn't cite them, but statistics on the gas station at Riverside near Howe School and the amount of police calls were in the middle of the night.
That Shell station down there?
Yeah, whereas the preponderance of police calls were the middle of the night. So to me, that would be a public nuisance. I mean, if you're running something to generate that many police calls, too. So I wonder if there's not... I like your idea of the PDD process, but for places that generate that many police calls, how do we deal with that? And if there are problems... Because a resident shouldn't have to put up with that. They just shouldn't. I mean, if you're running a clean operation, great, you know, more power to you, but thinking about businesses that could start generating problems, how do we deal with that?
Maybe deal with it under the nuisance ordinance, you know. But although it's kind of unfair in my mind to label the business as being the nuisance when the nuisance is people come in and rob, you know, or drive off. I mean, they're kind of penalizing the business owner, but, you know. But
well, I don't know. There's this attractive nuisance thing that our residents have to put up with, and so I don't know.
I think in most cases you'll find that these gas stations, specifically talking to gas stations, don't want to be open 24 hours, especially in this village, given the fact that it's costly for them to maintain the employees and every aspect that goes along with a 24-hour operation. When stand in the center of this village, in what, maybe 2 miles in any direction, you could find a place that would be open? Maybe three miles in any direction that would be open 24 hours.
Yeah, well, so Rob's point's valid. I mean, for our location, it's just not cost effective.
Right.
To have a 24/7 operation.
Right.
You know, it's different if you're located near a mill, you know, where there's a lot of, you know, multiple shifts, or if you're right next to a highway or something, you know, like 172 or 41, or you know, then it makes a little bit of sense. But you know,
we're not bad.
Trustee Duff.
In that sense, it's self-restricting. But I have a question. Were there any restrictions put on the car wash up here on the corner of Alloway Avenue and Webster when it went in? Because theoretically, that's open 24/7. I mean, I can pull up there in the middle of the night and, you know, get a car wash if I want. But were there any restrictions or anything put on that at the time that that was put in? That would be something that I'm just curious about.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so, but at the same time, you know.
Well, you could ask the same question as of the laundromat, you know, because they're open 24/7, the one over on Green and Libel.
Well, the sense I'm hearing is that we'll just table this and revisit either on a case-by-case basis through the PDD process or a rezone request and not do anything globally to try to present or prevent, which we might have some legal problems and challenges with anyway. That seemed to be the sense of the board?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Then we'll move on to what ultimately might be a good, very fun discussion is how do we spend $770,000, although that
new water.
That hasn't been approved yet, correct? Right. So this might be a little premature. But I know Brad has some ideas, and at least to give us some food for thought to, you know, take home and consider and, you know, and deliberate on our own, and then if it actually passes and we do have the money, then we've at least had a chance to give it some consideration on our own. So,
Go ahead, Brad.
Yes, it has not been officially passed yet. Hopefully this year is the next vote that could take place. Economic Development Committee talked about, and their ideas have been added to this list, and that's what I'm trying to do, is just generate a list of ideas so that when ultimately it would be nice to have a public hearing or public information meeting designated solely for this type of discussion, because it does affect all of us. It's a one-time thing that we want to make sure that we are utilizing the funds to the best of its ability. And so right now, some of the ideas that have been written down are all in the economic development stages of it. Some of the discussion as to whether or not to use it for debt reduction, absolutely. I mean, that is a potential. Is that giving you the best use of the funds? That's to be determined yet. Tax relief, again, is that given the best use of the funds? I'm looking at it as, here's an opportunity to take a large sum of money and invest it back into the community and get a long term when some of the other items are short term fix. So that's what I'm asking the board to start to do, is start jotting down, thinking outside the box of some items that you may see as a potential, and we'll continue to do this through the other committees, and ultimately we'll have a public information meeting and we can start to narrow it down. Hopefully by that time the bill has been passed and we will possibly receipt of the $700,000+.
Brett, have this issue placed upon the committee agendas for discussion? I mean, I think this came from, was it economic development?
No, I started with economic development.
Okay. Yeah, but let's...
It was discussed at Plan Commission, too, wasn't
it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure the committees get a chance to weigh in so that we get a comprehensive list of the board, and then we'll have at least one public session, maybe two, for input on that, and then the board can make some decisions, in terms.
And having Claire look at the idea of using it as debt reduction, using it for tax relief, what does that ultimately look like within the budget? What is the effect? So we want to make sure that we're covering all these bases. They didn't want to get too excited with, run out early, and we're not spending this money tomorrow. This is a long-term project or projects that we'll probably be working with, but again, it's something that is going to be long-lasting versus a short-term.
No, I mean, so many of the discussions that we have are, discussions of lack, We don't have the money in the budget to do that, and, we can't do this because we don't have the money in the budget, and we don't want to raise the taxes, and, so this will be a nice discussion. And granted, this is tax money, but it'll be us to be good stewards of it and figure out ways to invest in the village. But it'll be a nice discussion because it'll be nice to figure out how we can invest this kind of money back into the community. Trustee Harris.
What, do we know the latest timeline for how it's progressing?
I did not look today. I apologize for that. I can look and let you know where it stands today or tomorrow.
I don't see a statue of Claude Elloway bearing strong resemblance to Trustee Atwood on here at all. Or Trustee Rafter.
I have a video.
All right, food for thought, keep it on, and everybody add to the list. I mean, at some point we're going to have that discussion, so let's really, really think about it. Anything else on this subject? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Green, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We stand adjourned.